Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, it was just yesterday as we closed. We said we didn't have a very good martinis this week, and we're hoping for some polls that would give us a little optimism. We do have a poll from NBC News that suggests that the president is taking some pretty serious hits as more Americans pay attention to his foreign policy record, obviously in the wake of last week's horrific attacks against our diplomatic corps in Benghazi, as well as just riots all over the Muslim world. So the NBC Wall Street Journal poll released Tuesday found the president's foreign policy approval among registered voters at 49%, down from 54% 1 month earlier. The fall was steeper among independents, going from 53% in August to 41%. Obama's foreign policy disapproval up from 40 to 46%. The only troubling stat here is that when asked whether Obama or Romney would be a better commander-in-chief, Obama still leads 45 to 38%. Jim, I know that the president got a spike after the bin Laden death and it came right down, so it's possible this could tick back up in the 7 weeks before the election, but it's pretty clear, especially among independents, that they're just itching to do something else here and possibly vote this guy out. That's got to be somewhat encouraging with independents down at 41%.
Yeah, we have the somewhat encouraging martini today, Greg. one of the things that kind of jumps out at this, first of all, I'm not that worried about Obama being ahead on the commander-in-chief question. Very rarely would see an incumbent president trailing a challenger who has not been president on which one seems more like a commander-in-chief. People are used to thinking about Obama in this role. So for most voters, he's going to have that instinctive advantage. What kind of jumps out about this, my new theory of the race, is that you look when Obama got his bump in the past week or so, a lot of people said this really was a result of the Democratic convention. Consensus was Democrats had a good convention. A lot of people credited Bill Clinton's speech. And so it seemed like you look at that, you look at some of the ads the Democrats are running, that maybe the Democrats are winning the message war. They are better at messages. And let's face it, Democrats have a fairly seductive message. Here's free stuff from government. You know, we're going to give you free health care. We're going to give you free contraception. Government's going to do all these things for you. Government is good at doing things. The Republican message of self-reliance and you know, things like that is always a tougher message to sell. As some might tell us, perhaps even 47% of Americans aren't going to be receptive to that. But when you look at Obama slipping a bit in these polls, maybe you could argue that the Republicans have had a better message in the past week. But I think the simpler explanation, and Occam's razor would suggest you should always lean towards the simplest explanation, that in other words, that when we see our ambassador getting murdered, when we see angry crowds taking down the American flag at U.S. embassies and burning them and putting up Islamist flags, people feel bad about the president. They're not happy. They're frustrated. They're angry. They don't understand why this is happening. They don't understand why we're not getting the warmer, happier relations with the Muslim world that we were promised. And so my suspicion is that Democrats, you know, do better when the message is dominant. Republicans do better when events are dominant. And so it's on the one hand, for a Republican, this can be very frustrating that we're not really in control of which is preeminent in voters' minds. On the other hand, what it really means is that they say things better than we do, but their policies don't work. I know which side I would rather be on. In other words, I would rather have mediocre ads selling a better product than really good ads selling a not-so-great product. And I think that's what the challenge for the Romney campaign and the challenge for the Obama campaign in these last, you know, 50-some days, which is that the Obama campaign has to persuade people to not pay attention to gas prices, the unemployment rate, storming of our embassies, housing prices, you know, one indicator after another, things are wrong. Just don't think about those things. Look at how happy, you know, the optimism is up and things are going great and better days are ahead, hope and change, all that kind of stuff. Romney needs people to focus on all that stuff. Where Romney needs to do is not get into this, you know, 47% comment or, you know, we've had one kerfuffle after another on, you know, first it was the 47% comment supposed to destroy him. Then it was his comment in response to the Libya thing that was supposed to destroy him. And before that, it was the Olympics comment that was supposed to destroy him. Romney's been declared, you know, doomed week after week, and yet the polls never seem to demonstrate that, suggesting that a lot of what we talk about in terms of the messaging of these campaigns may be a lot less relevant than we think, and that events may be a lot more important than the inside the beltway mentality and the Gang of 500, so to speak, would think that they are.
Well, hopefully that's true. But turns out that the media has an endless supply of bright, shiny objects because it's so hard for Romney to get back on the message that he's best at and that people would probably be most persuaded by, because every time he says something, it's either twisted, like it was with the response to the situation in Benghazi, or they dig up something like this where he's basically right and said exactly what he meant to say, just was perhaps a little more blunt in what he thought was a private setting. So it's going to be interesting to see if he can get back on message for as long as he needs to over the home stretch here. On to martini number two now, Jim, and you probably remember you were there for Bill Clinton's endless speech and how everything that was horrible in America was actually really good because Barack Obama was doing the best he possibly could. And if you just look really closely at the record, everything's great, including welfare changes. The president trying to claim that what President Obama did through an executive order in waiving work requirements connected to the Welfare Reform Act of 1996, it's just to make the work requirements even more stringent. Well, that's not true. According to the Congressional Research Service, and this is reported by the Washington Examiner in a story by Philip Klein, quote, in addition to the broader work requirement that has become a contentious issue in the presidential race, the 1996 welfare reform law included a separate rule encouraging able-bodied adults without dependents to work by limiting the amount of time they could receive food stamps. President Obama suspended that rule when he signed his economic stimulus legislation into law, and the number of these adults on food stamps doubled from 1.9 million in 2008 to 3.9 million in 2010. So obviously this is a different work requirement than the one that just got suspended earlier this summer. But Jim, the proof is in the pudding here that when you waive the work requirements, people just line up. And that's pretty much lining up with exactly what Mitt Romney was trying to say in that speech back in May.
Yeah, and there's two ways to interpret this. The first is you could say, well, this just indicates just how horrific the economy is. How that's a winning message for the Obama campaign doesn't make me clear. But I think that the greater and more significant interpretation of this, do all 3.9 million people collecting those food stamps, do they all need them? I suppose it's possible, but you'd have to be pretty optimistic about people to believe that every single one of them is deserving of it and no one's committing fraud. And, you know, we've seen fraud in every single federal program. Wouldn't seem to make sense there wouldn't be fraud in that program. And I think that, you know, you see things like this. You see people collecting benefits that they're not entitled to. And it kind of eats away at both the American spirit of feeling the need that you're supposed to try to be independent. You're supposed to not depend on other people to take care of you. And also, I think it makes a lot of other Americans feel like they're being played for suckers, that they're being taken advantage of. That, look, we are an extremely charitable country. I talked a bit about this on Campaign Spot yesterday. Look, you know, Americans have no problem with federal programs designed to take care of those who really do need it. We have no problem with veterans programs taking care of those who have served our country. We have Social Security and Medicare to take care of the elderly because we don't want old people living in poverty in their final years. We don't want, you know, the poor, the disabled to struggle to get by. That's why we have Medicaid. And as long as you really do need these, you know, these benefits, nobody has any problem with that. The problem is we've seen abuse of these programs. And, you know, the old, you know, commentary that, you know, programs designed to be a safety net are being treated as a hammock. If you're healthy and capable of working in a job, you should be out working in that job. You should not, you know, even if you don't like it, you should not be collecting unemployment. If you're on food stamps, you know, look, you should take care of yourself, you should feed your family. Nobody wants to see anyone going hungry in this country. You don't necessarily want, you know, food stamp use to be stigmatized as a sign of shame or that there's something wrong with you, because anybody can hit hard times in their life. But on the other hand, you're not supposed to feel great about being on food stamps either. You know, there should be something, this is something you don't want to be on. You certainly don't want to brag about. You certainly kind of want to say, look, this is a temporary solution to a temporary problem. I'm going to get myself to a point where I don't need this anymore. When you see the food stamp use doubling, when allegedly we're out of recession, and when allegedly, you know, the country's on the road to recovery, that suggests something is terribly, terribly wrong. And the idea that the federal government and various state governments are trying to encourage food stamp use is deeply, deeply disturbing, because it just seems like an invitation to abuse. It seems like an invitation to fraud. People who don't really need them saying, hey, the government's going to give me something for free, why shouldn't I take it? That's extremely damaging to our social fabric, I think to our trust of our fellow citizens, and to a sense of, you know, the work ethic and drive that has made America what it was.
Very well.
Hopefully is, but maybe it is. Maybe past tense is appropriate here.
Jim, you and I have commented on our recordings and off in our emails prepping for these recordings this week about how difficult it is to find a good martini, and we just need some levity. It's been a very difficult week, you know, with all the tragedy that happened in Africa and just the political sniping and intensifying. We just need something to relax a little bit. And there are going to be some people who say, you know, this isn't very nice. This is morbid. You guys should be more mature than this or something like that. To them, I say too bad. Here's the story from the New York Post. Quote, in an apparent case of red, white, and blue revenge, a Pakistani protester died yesterday, this would be Monday, after inhaling smoke from a burning American flag during an anti-U.S. rally. Abdullah Ismail succumbed a day after attending the fierce protest at the city's Mall Road, where an estimated 10,000 people rallied. He had complained of feeling ill after breathing fumes from burning flags. And, Jim, I have no sympathy here whatsoever.
You know, Greg, I just can't believe people thought carbon emissions were a bad thing. I suppose at some point we will hear people saying it's time for American flags to come with Surgeon General's warnings. Be careful about inhaling the fumes of this. Perhaps some sort of public education campaign to warn troubled youth about the dangers of burning the American flag and how it can be hazardous to your health. Now, I would point out, obviously, I am someone who believes in the First Amendment, but also feels like the burning of the flag is a particularly risky maneuver to express your disapproval of this country. I've always kind of felt like, well, if you burn a flag, then a wounded veteran has the right to set you on fire. I'm being slightly facetious in that, but I just want to point out, regular listeners know I spent 2 years in Turkey. In Turkey, not only is it illegal to burn the flag, if you see someone attempting to burn the Turkish flag and you do not attempt to stop them, you can be charged with a crime. So for all the folks who say, oh, America's so oppressive and, oh, we need to be more open. Hey, look, this is the standard. You know, in other parts of the world, not only do they, you know, take a really hard line on burning the flag, they take a hard line on standing by while somebody else burns the flag. So why you would want to use that particular method to express your disagreement with any particular government policy escapes me, particularly when it's been adopted as the move of Al-Qaeda and these Islamist crowds out in the Middle East. So, but hey, you know, one less guy for us to worry about, and maybe everybody else who's contemplating burning the flag will be a little more careful next time, okay? At the very least, try not to stand downwind of your horrific offensive flag barbecues.
Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us today. And don't forget to join us again on Thursday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.